We begin this broadcast of the Merrick versus Wyszynski broadcast for the breaking news. The breaking news sounder. We were watching Keeping Up with the Kardashians here on the E! Network, and down at the bottom of the screen, there was a breaking, well, not breaking, but it was the little news crawl that they have on the E! Network. And
yeah.
Jeff Merrick, I don't know if this is going to affect Canada as much as it's going to affect the U.S.
Uh-oh.
But they're reviving the Match Game, and Alec Baldwin's going to host it.
Wait a minute. Like, as in the 70s?
Yes.
Hold on a second here.
Yeah.
Hold on a second.
Yeah.
Because this was actually, to nobody's surprise, something that I used to love.
Oh, yeah.
God. As a kid, I was like the biggest Gene Rayburn fan in the world. I never missed Match Game. Oh, my God. That's amazing. Oh, and the fact that later on in life I found out how hammered the panelists were. They would tape everything on the Sunday. They'd have them all juiced in the green room for the show. Oh, my God, because then I go back
Sally,
and watch like old Match Games on YouTube, and then I realize, oh, man, they're all starched. This is cool.
Sally sells seashells at the seashore, but when she doesn't sell seashells, she puts them in her blank.
Blank.
That's right. I said clam. Charles Nelson Reilly.
Oh, Charles. You
said. Yeah, so I imagine that means that Alec Baldwin's going to be a panelist on the show rather than the host. Like, I'm sure he's going to be like.
No, I just, hang on, because I just did a quick little Google search, and it sounds like he is going to host. Alec Baldwin.
He's going to be Gene Rayburn?
Alec Baldwin will be Gene Rayburn, yeah.
That's brilliant.
That's great. That is good. Now, the only way it'll work is, much like the original Match Game, everyone's drunk.
Copious amounts of alcohol.
Coke,
take
too.
The alcohol.
A lot of Coke. A lot of Coke. God, you get to have like baseball foul lines all over the set.
Everyone, oh, that's easy. All you
totally tweaked.
Just import what they no longer use for the NHL All-Star Game Fantasy Draft, because you'll remember they had a lot of alcohol, but according to Phil Kessel, they were all drinking Coke.
Just get everyone tweaked.
Woo.
Yeah, great.
All right, so that's awesome. That's huge.
We should do a hockey version of Match Game.
Well, you know my dream is
I'm just
dopey live shows do the Family Feud. We probably could do it in Buffalo. Like, by the way, Buffalo live show coming up. And I think it's going to is the latest
coming.
Word that it might be free.
I'm trying to make it so it's free. Me and Kevin are trying to figure, because the original plan was like, okay, $20 plus you get free food. And I was like, I don't know if I like that. I just like the idea of just show up. Just like we did at Foley's. Like we did at that spot in Philadelphia. Like Paige Lewis. What was that place that Paige got us last year, which was a great spot in Fort Lauderdale. Like just like that. Like just show up. There's no money. It's just come and drink.
So you're saying you'd like to combine the MVSW happy hours that we have on the road with a live podcast.
That's right. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Just fun. Just fun. Just free. Just it's the same as the show. It's just free. Here, take it. Go.
Give something back to the people. Yeah, I love it. I love it a lot. And maybe there'll be enough alcohol to soothe all of the sadness and ills of our friends in the Ducks community. Jesus.
Don't nerds know that there is enough alcohol in North America right now? See, here's the underlying thing out of all of it is, listen, this is probably going to cost Bruce Boudreau his job, which sucks, but he's going to be unemployed for about 5 minutes, right? Whether it's Ottawa, whether it's Minnesota, whether it's another team that, you know, is going to, you know, turf their head coach. Bruce is not going to be unemployed very long.
I went through the Bruce stuff on Puck Daddy today, and two things I discovered. One that I think is his fault for losing 7 of 8 game sevens in his career, and one that's not. The not is the save percentage for his goaltenders in game sevens at even strength is 868. That's
not good.
Pathetic. And that ain't the coach. Okay. When it's 8-68 and they lose their, and most of the games that he's lost in a game seven have been by one goal, that's on the goalie. And when you look at the legacy of game seven goaltenders that Bruce has had, it's Cristobal Huey. It's Varlamov in his first 2 years. It's, Jonas Hiller. It's John Gibson, then replaced by Jonas Hiller. And then it's Freddie Anderson twice. And, like, those are all serviceable goalies. And Varlamov eventually became a workhorse starter. But none of them are Pekka Rinne. None of them are, you know, Corey Crawford even.
Let me ask you this then. Let me ask you this question. Yeah. There will probably be one firing in Anaheim. Should there be two?
With the GM?
Yeah. Like, they're gonna, because listen, hang on a second. Just hear me out on this one. This is a team that this year spent $64 million on salary. Okay, like that's where they're at. This is not a cap team. This is a budget team. There are some RFAs they're going to have to walk away from, right?
Right.
They're probably going to have to move Sammy Vatanen. They will probably have to move Freddie Anderson. They're going to go with John Gibson. Thank you very much. He is their guy. So there are some significant young players they're going to have to walk away from. Mm-hmm. And why are they going to have to walk away from them? Because of contracts like Kevin Bieksa at $4.5 million.
It's $4 million.
$4.2 million?
Yeah, about $4.2 million, I think, is the hit.
And the biggie is Ryan Kesler at $6.7 or $6.6, wherever he's at. That's a whopper.
That Kesler is at actually
that is a whopper of a contract.
Kesler is at $6.875 million.
Oof.
And that's
when does it expire? Because it's a 6 year contract, right? When does
it expire? It expires in 2022.
Good lord.
I know. But they're a win now team, man. Like that's the thing. Like, you know, I think in hindsight, because it didn't work out, you say Murray effed them royally with those contracts. But they were in win-now mode. Maybe that comes down from the ownership, right?
I don't know that the Samuelis are out there saying hand $40 million to Ryan Kesler and hand, what, $12, $15 million to Kevin Bieksa.
Regime change might not be the worst thing to happen there, total regime change.
If well, regardless, go, I mean, they're gonna lose some young players, right? And they almost did because it was a big deal on the table between Edmonton and Anaheim, as you talked about a couple weeks ago on the show.
Yep.
That would have seen a couple of those. I mean, listen, now Anaheim, in their defense, and this is to Bob Murray's defense here, for the Sammy Vatanens that they're going to lose, there is a Shea Theodore. For the Cam Fowlers that they may end up losing, there's a Brandon Montour. So it isn't as if they haven't done their job drafting and developing. I think Dallas Eakins specifically, Marty Wilford as well, great job, has done a great job developing players in San Diego this season.
Do you think
that
a guy's
ready to step in?
You think Dallas gets that job?
Do I think he gets the Anaheim job? No, I think that's Trent Yanni's.
If Bob Murray's still there,
that's what I mean. Listen, man, they fired Brad Lauer last year, so already they've taken away the assistant, and I think that if Bob Murray is still there, and I still think that he will be, if Bob Murray is still there, then I think this is Trent Yanni's job. That's how it feels to me. I don't know how it feels to you, but that's how it feels to me.
The other thing that I found out about Boudreau that I thought was interesting. In trying to pinpoint what you can blame the guy for, because you can't blame him for the save percentage, you can't blame him for the shooting percentage, you can't blame him for, you know, Corey Perry only scoring two kind of garbage time third period goals in four game sevens, you can't blame him for that. But you can blame him, I think, for losing five game sixes and then losing five game sevens after losing those five game sixes. And in six of the seven Game 7 losses, it's the road team and the underdog in the game that scores the first goal. The only game that Bruce coached, a Game 7 he coached, in which the team he was coaching scored the first goal and they ended up losing the game was 2008 Capitals Flyers. That was the only time. That was the last, and that was Ovechkin's first playoff. So every other game 7 loss since then, the road team has scored the first goal and set the tempo and obviously playing the percentages of the silly league that we follow, winning the game if you score first goal.
How much, we've talked about this before a little bit. How much difference do you see between coaches? Because right away, like our first conversation with Anaheim now is what's going to happen to Bruce Boudreau, right? Right away. Just like when Boston didn't make the playoffs, our first conversation is about Claude Julien. And we think the coach has so much of an effect on the team.
How much
difference is, like, outside of the elite guys, right?
All right.
How much difference is there between
you're
coaches?
Is this going to be a goalie argument? You're only as good as your goalie kind of argument?
No, it's just that there's only so many ways you can play in the NHL, right? Like, unless you're completely revolutionizing the coaching position or doing something so profoundly different than anybody else. I mean, really, there's only a few ways you can play structurally. At that point, it just comes to just a matter of composition. How good your team is. How skilled your players are. Now, I know there are some coaches that after a while, they do have a shelf life and they grade on players. I don't know that Bruce Boudreau is that guy. But how much difference do you really see between coaches?
I see my philosophy on coaching.
I don't see a ton.
My philosophy on coaching is that it's situational. I think you can have a super talented team like the Chicago Blackhawks, but if Denny Savard was still behind the bench, they wouldn't be a dynasty. You need that Joel Quenneville. You need that Phil Jackson. You need that Pat Riley. These guys that know how to manage egos and how to make adjustments like those great coaches do, and Scotty was another one.
But Quenneville rose with the Hawks too, though. I mean, sure he had, but listen, I know that there was a success at St. Louis and Colorado. I get all that. The legend of Joel Quenneville grew with the legend of the Hawks. So it wasn't as if there was this, you know, this amazing team that was sitting there waiting for the great coach to be parachuted in for the 2010
Cup win. No, but it's symbiotic. But it's symbiotic.
He grew with it. Yes,
they don't grow without him. You could easily throw another guy in that job and he doesn't get the same results. And I think Quenneville gets the results with that kind of team. But I think the other kind of coach is a coach that you can point to and say, well, he's done a hell of a job with a lot less. Those are usually your Jack Adams winners.
Those are your Jack Adams.
But like a Dave Tippett makes a difference.
But the thing is, that doesn't last very long. That's like one season. Wow, great job. And then, oh, wow, how come Calgary didn't make the playoffs? Oh, wow, what happened to Colorado? Really?
Yeah, but those aren't guys making a difference. That's like puck luck and, you know, spit and tape and prayers. I'm talking about guys that go into situations and make a difference.
But you can't make a difference just one year. Making a difference, that's just like a fluke.
Like Jacques Lemaire.
Makes a difference long term. Makes a difference long term.
Right.
But that's what I'm saying.
Like systems guys can make a difference long term.
But that's the thing. Like, it's a handful of guys that we're talking about here.
Yeah.
That's why, I mean, essentially the case that I'm trying to make here is coaches are fired far too often, far too quickly. And I think Bruce will be another example of that.
See, Bruce is an interesting case.
He'll probably get fired, but where's a better coach out there waiting to step in for Anaheim?
He's an interesting case because like usually the thing is that you miss the playoffs or something. Mm-hmm. And you have your Pittsburgh outliers where, you know, Boswell makes a second round and gets fired. But usually it's a situation like Julien was in this year. But they bought him back, to their credit. In Bruce's case, he's a freak. He's the only guy in this league outside of Hitchcock that could be a Jack Adams finalist and get fired.
Get fired, yes.
And it's not to say that, Hitchcock is going to get fired this year. But you know what I mean, though? Like,
oh, I know.
Regular season success is so damn good, and in theory should be the thing that keeps you from getting fired. But the playoff disappointment is so palpable. And
it's
so
funny
enormous,
too, because
and so heartbreaking.
As we talked about on the podcast the other day, you know, the 82 game measuring stick in a lot of ways is more significant than the 16 win playoffs, where you just run into a hot goaltender and you're sunk, right? Go ask the Florida Panthers how they feel about, you know, all of a sudden their shooting percentage at 3 because the goalie's been fantastic. And John Tavares is, even though Florida carried play, go ask the Florida Panthers how they feel about the playoffs. They were the better team. They going on? Nope. That's just it. You want to sink Bruce Boudreau for losing in the first round? It's one round against Nashville, a really good team. And what happened yesterday, even though you can make the argument that Anaheim was the better team, Pekka-Rinne was great. It was fantastic last night. But here's where ownership. You there, by the way, Greg?
We lose Wish.
Did we lose Wish? Oh, he's making a point, too. Okay, but here's where I'll just pick up and pretend that, you know, Wish is still there. Okay, you know what? So here's the thing. Where it gets tricky is this is kind of where ownership steps in, right? This is where, uh-oh, we've budgeted for at least, I don't know, take your pick, two, maybe three rounds of playoffs. Now, all of a sudden, that money's not there. So even if we wanted to re-up with all of our guys, we can't because we're a budget team. We're not a cap team. And you couple that with some of these contracts that as they continue will look more and more like albatrosses. And we focused on Ryan Kesler, and that's the obvious one. And we focused on Kevin Bieksa, who
I'm
can't
play
against top competition anymore. Excuse me, I'm talking.
Sorry, lost the signal for a second.
That's okay. I'm just making the other point about, you know, firing the head coach is no one really fires a head coach, obviously, without telling the owner. And you wonder how much ownership says, hold on a second here. We budgeted for two, maybe three rounds with the Anaheim Ducks. Now, even if we wanted to re-up with all of our guys, UFA and RFA, we can't do that because we got, hang on. Not only did we only get four playoff dates, but at home, we lost three of them.
Mm-hmm.
Nashville won three games at the pond.
You think that they budget that way? Boy, that seems like a really bad way to run a team.
I don't know. When you're Anaheim and you're paying that kind of money and, you know, you're a team that's not spending up to the cap, you're saying to yourself, we need that money, and this is a team that should be there, and this is a team that went to the conference. Like, when you're a team that goes to the conference final and still has Getzlaff and Perry and, you know, that dynamic blue line and the goaltending of Freddie Anderson, how can you not say we need to budget for two, maybe three rounds? We need to budget like we're going to get to the conference final again.
Yeah. Nah.
I don't know, man. Anaheim's going to be, again, as every team goes out, what a fascinating story to watch unfold.
We got Brett.
Here's
Hedekin
the other one. What does Hampus Lindholm get? Right? Now, here's the thing. He doesn't have the points. Right? I think he's a more valuable defenseman than Morgan Riley, same draft class, and should probably be paid more than Morgan Riley. But he doesn't get the points like Morgan Riley does.
Right.
Which may save Bob Murray some money here. He's a hell of a defenseman, though.
Yeah, but he's also over a barrel because he's an RFA. Hey, we got Brett Hedekin coming up at the top of the hour as we're taping at a half hour. I don't know why I said top of the hour. It's like traffic and weather together coming up. Islanders last night were very much the Islanders of the first round. There were stretches of that game where I felt like the Lightning took it to them. And Tavares was great. And Grice was great. And the thing that's carried over now, and it's the thing that's making me really intrigued about how far they're going to push this, is they're starting to get a hero in every game. Like, last night it was Prince. We saw Hickey. We saw Quine. We saw different guys in those wins. And then, of course, Tavares in the clincher last round to kind of rise up and make the big play. Yeah. And those two goals from Prince last night, I mean, knocked the Lightning around on their asses, and all of a sudden, Vezina finalist Ben Bishop's out of the game in the next period.
Yes. I don't know that this is with all due respect to the Islanders. And I'm going to hear, oh, you hit on the Islanders. Oh, you're critiquing a win. Oh, they were excellent last night. Man, Tampa was soft. Tampa came out with nothing yesterday. I know it was a gorgeous play. You know, Drouin to Palat's 1-0 crowd goes crazy. But, man, did Tampa come out flat. And here's the interesting thing.
They got their asses handed to them by that checking line. That checking line just bullied them all night.
Well, and we'll probably not see Eric Condra back in the NHL for a very long time because of it, because of Casey Cizikas. But
Legal hit, by the way. You right?
Legal, yeah, totally legal hit. You could make the slim case for boarding, maybe, if you really wanted to stretch it.
I think you got that caveat in the boarding penalty rule about players putting themselves
using
in a prone position.
As a weapon,
because Cizikas looks like he's trying to take him all the way to the end boards, and then Condra plays the puck, turns around, and then gets pushed. Yeah. And I think it's one of those a terrible series of unfortunate events is what it was.
Hockey. It was hockey. An accident, and dangerous things happen in hockey. Like
hockey, a.k.a. a terrible series of unfortunate events.
So what happened on that play? Well, hockey happened on that play. Here, I talked to John Cooper on Hockey Central on Monday, and it sounded very much like he was under the impression that Game 1 was going to be on Thursday because he gave the Tampa Bay Lightning Monday off. Complete day off. I wonder if he knew, because that was a surprise to everyone. Like, we got to go back to 83 for a second round starting before the first round's concluded. I wonder if he knew that Game 1 would be Wednesday, if he still would have given Tampa the day off on Wednesday. My guess would be no.
Well, just having that much time. I mean, they nearly had a week off. That just having that much time off is gonna mess with your process.
Ask the Ottawa Senators what that's like in 2007.
Yeah, right.
Before the Stanley Cup. What, a week
that's
and a half?
That's a great example.
He chilled out. Hey, man, go to the Viper Room. We don't play hockey for a week and a half. Here we are in California. All right.
So that's a good starting off point for the Islanders right there. We'll get to the other two series, obviously. We're going to talk to Hedekin about the Sharkies and the Predsies. And then also we'll talk about the Blues and Dallas and, of course, Sid and Ovi. One thing I wanted to get to before we get to Hedekin and start the show proper, all that stuff, real briefly, what an interesting situation in Arizona right now, where it looks like, according to Bob McKenzie, the window to talk to Les Jackson from the Dallas Stars, the assistant general manager, is closed. Everyone assumed that Jackson was going to reunite with Tippett in Arizona. Yeah. And be the GM with this 26-year-old wunderkind, John Chayka. Was it Chayka? Chayka?
John Chayka, yeah. Stathletes is the company. I know someone from that company relatively well. It is, right. And I talked to a coach a couple weeks ago who used this company specifically in the OHL. Mm-hmm. And the company that he started, Stathletes, is a fascinating one. And they're
27 years old in June, and it looks like he's going to end up being the GM of this NHL team. And it looks like, according to McKenzie, that it's going to be Lawrence Gilman as sort of his mentor. Sort of the Rick Dudley to his whatever the hell, you know.
It's a few teams that are going all in, right? Florida's going in all in on analytics, it seems. You know, if you can put it this way, if you can read War on Ice, there's a job in Florida for you right now.
Right, and like I said, when the Red Wings were also advertising for a new director of statistics today, if some of your favorite analytics follows on Twitter all of a sudden get really favorable towards a team, guess what?
All I'm saying is, here's an interesting experiment for everybody. Let's watch which writers end up with which NHL teams, and then go back and follow their timelines.
Well,
so be an interesting investigation into what has happened during the playoffs and where certain writers end up in the NHL.
It'd be great if you could, but I imagine there'll be a little scrub of the timeline. And in some cases, maybe they just disappear from social media altogether for a while.
Might happen. Who knows?
I think it's a really exciting thing for the Coyotes to go in that direction with that kid.
I agree. I want to pick up on John Chayka in a couple of seconds here, but let me say one thing. I'm always of the mind, and this is why, you know, either us or TSN or ESPN or someone, NBC Sports, needs to lock up some of these people. Because never lose sight of one thing. Generally, and I'm painting with a wide brush here, but correct me if I'm wrong, Hockey Analytics Twitter. Generally, a lot of people who do this online as a passion play, as a passion hobby, want to be employed by NHL teams. So as much as we may hire writers and TSN hires writers that specialize in analytics, if a team does come calling, you know, unlike, you know, if someone comes calling for Steve Simmons or comes calling for whomever, like generally they'll be told no, like I'm not interested. I'm a journalist. I'm doing this. When you do analytics, that's more of a thing than just trafficking in opinion. This is something that actually tangibly helps the results of a hockey team. Generally, these people do want to work for NHL teams. So although I say tongue-in-cheek, hey, watch and see who follows and then find out who ends up with NHL teams, always keep in mind, my opinion anyhow, that these people want to work for NHL teams, so we shouldn't be surprised when they do get hired.
Yeah, it's not the same thing as broadcasters or bloggers.
Well, you know why?
I got to tell you right now that I think that Dave Tippett is a beautiful man. I think Dave Tippett is a genius. I think the ownership in Arizona is extraordinarily strong. And I would say that Glendale is the Glendale, and not so much the Glendale City Council, but Glendale itself, beautiful place. Great people.
Let me. I'll give you some. Here's a little scoop for you to that end. Because the analytics people actually do something, whereas I don't. But I was approached by an NHL team this year to come and work for them. And I said, I can't, because I can't offer you really anything. Like, my wife always asks me, like, what do you do for a living, Jeff? What do you really do? And my answer is always the same. I talk about things that other people did. I don't make anything. I don't help anything. I don't really do anything, hon. And every 2 weeks, a paycheck shows up. Mm-hmm. Which is why I was kind of surprised that this team approached me. I was like, well, I don't know really
what
I
can do. Like,
and then they put forward a position. I'm like, well, I don't know that I really do that.
they're like, we need a mobile veteran defenseman. And Merrick's like, what? Oh, and they're like, wait.
If you want a slow, knock-kneed skater who's prone to the big turnover in the defensive zone, like, I'm your guy.
I'm so sorry. It just said Merrick in my phone, and I assumed it was Zidlicky. not the radio guy who had the wrestling show. All right, Sammy, before we get to our guest, I suppose at this point we should probably start the show proper, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
Are you familiar with the game called hockey?
All I have to do is talk for a living. If you say lube 10 times, you just feel better.
You say lube 10 times, you gotta feel better.
Why shouldn't I always be happy? I'm stealing money.
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
I went through life with this last name, okay? I'm a kindly old wizard. Close your eyes, hold your nose, swallow the medicine.
Debate hockey.
Swift Current Broncos.
The old one.
That's for sure games. The Vancouver Giants.
God.
Pop culture.
I don't want to be culturally insensitive. I never am on this show. So we still may have Twinkies here in the States.
Still may have the ho-ho. Good news.
Might have the ding-dong.
And more hockey.
Jeff Merrick on the puck. Scooting up and down. Knocking the biscuit around.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Let's start the show proper, shall we?
All right. Brett Hedekin coming up in a second. There's absolutely no way that Jonathan Quick should have been a finalist for the Vezina over Corey Crawford. Or over anybody named Corey this season, to be honest
over
with you.
Corey, but Schneider, over Marc-Andre Fleury, no, but Steve
Schneider's,
Mason, over
Schneider's
Henrik
Lundqvist. Not getting it. Like, Schneider's not getting it because, I mean, I'm fully willing to say that Bishop and Holtby are ahead in the queue in the Eastern Conference. So he's obviously not getting it because it's the GMs that vote, right?
Yeah.
That's fine.
It's true. And it well, again, we've made the point of the podcast before. The one set of people who consistently miss on goaltenders are general managers, and that is by their own admission. So why are they voting for the Vezina? The fact that, and this is no slight on Jonathan Quick, who's a good goalie, and there's nothing wrong with being a good goalie in the NHL. I'm just not prepared to call him great after he's only had one great season in the NHL. It sounds like you're insulting him when you say he shouldn't be a Vezina Trophy candidate. There's nothing wrong with being a good goalie, and that's what he is. I just don't think he's a great goalie, and the stats back it up as well. But here, the fact that he is included as amongst the Vezina Trophy finalists as voted on by the general managers, can we start a movement where it's only goalies that are allowed to vote on GM of the Year? If the GMs are going to vote on goalies, let's have the goalies vote on GM of the year. How about that?
How about this? How about maybe the rest of the GMs don't leave Corey Crawford off their ballot out of spite because they don't like Stan Bowman and actually vote the way you should vote and put the guy who deserved to be a Vezina finalist in the top three? As good as Kane was, as good as Panarin was, Corey Crawford is just as valuable. He's as very much as valuable as either of those guys in saving their bacon, as we saw in the playoffs where, you know, Gustafson and TVR were exposed all over the place because Crawford didn't save their bacon like he did in the regular season.
Let's get to our guest. More on the Vezina controversy in moments. Introduce our guest, Greg. He's standing by patiently.
Joining us now, one of our favorite people to talk to and a guy that I'm sure is very excited about the way the playoffs have gone so far because he's relevant in the second round. It's Brett Hedekin of CS Barrier. Brett, what's going on, man? This is an exciting time to be alive in San Jose.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think you look at the demons that some of the teams in that first round, you know, particularly the Sharks and St. Louis Blues that had to overcome those past demons. I think, you know, you listen to a lot of the comments coming out of St. Louis. This is a different team. These are guys that some of them haven't been around long enough to remember some of those demons. So those guys were a breath of fresh air. And I think, you know, in some of the same fashion in San Jose, and you look at guys like Donskoy and Melker Carlson and Chris Tierney, these guys were new forwards that have come and haven't really inherited some of that those bad demons of the LA Kings past. And, you know, I thought they were the better team throughout the series. And, yeah, good times in San Jose to be moving on another round and continue to go towards, you know, those 16 wins, which they've been seeking for a long time.
What is Joe Thornton doing? Whatever he is taking at his advanced age in the NHL, Brett, sign me up, because this is looking like, I mean, he's always been the possession monster and he's been, you know, one of the best passers. He's on the best passer of this generation, but we're looking back at peak Thornton now. What is he doing?
Well, I mean, you got to look back to him. He's a Selke finalist because definitely a guy that is a Selke finalist because of the way he has worked in the getting back into the defensive zone, stripping players from behind. Definitely a guy that has been leading the charge with what he can do offensively, making plays. But, you know, yeah, don't do anything different if you're Joe Thornton. Continue to do what he's been doing all season long, which is making plays in traffic, making plays under pressure, finding the open man, it seems like, every time. So Joe Thornton has been a joy for me to watch and cover. I mean, I think people have given him a bad rap over the years with his leadership qualities or his ability to play great in the big game. Listen, I think the greatest thing for Joe Thornton what happened the other night in Game 7 was the fact that, or Game 6, excuse me, in LA, is the fact that he didn't probably have the strongest game, and they won the game. You know, they won it with their young players. They picked him up because he's been carrying them all season long. And that had to feel good for a guy like Joe Thornton that could go through a game 6 that was a closeout game, not have his strongest night, and have other guys pick him up that night. I think that's a big thing moving forward in the second round. Joe Thornton now has to have that confidence of having a team around him that can get it done when he's maybe not at his best.
Brett, did you let the cat out of the bag? Is Joe Thornton a Selke finalist?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't heard as of what is the final three guys at all, but I think he should be. I think he's a guy that, yeah, what I've seen all year in the players and the teams I've covered, he has been as good defensively in all three zones. The back pressure he has provided has been as good as any player I have watched all season long on top of what he does offensively. So, yeah, no, I think he should be a finalist.
Well, I'll have you know that because I'm based in New York, there's a significant amount of East Coast bias. He was fourth on my ballot. I had Bergeron, Barkov, Kopitar, Thornton, which I and then Couturier. I don't think anybody could argue with that, can they?
No Backstrom.
All five of those guys are great players.
So, Jeffy, you could. There's 1,000 guys that are Selke worthy. 1,000 guys that are Selke worthy. But I thought
there's two more that have snuck into the conversation that won't get much consideration, but Brett being in California will know these guys very well, even though they're not San Jose Sharks. Andrew Cogliano and Jakob Sulfurberg with Anaheim. Even though they're not going to be there, there's two more that are starting to creep their way into the conversation, are they not, Brett?
Oh, yeah. No, Cogliano, obviously with the durability of this guy, and for him to be in your lineup every night and to hold that Iron Man right now is incredible, because that guy doesn't play soft out there. That guy plays shift to shift hard. for 60 minutes. I mean, you haven't impressed with Cogliano, and Silverberg, no doubt, is a kid that's coming into his own defensively all through three zones. He's done a nice job of progressing, and, yeah, he'll be in that conversation in years to come.
Yeah, fatal flaw for your plan, though, Jeffy, which is that, as you know, the Selke Trophy is given to the forward who best excels in the defensive aspects of the game as long as they're a center. So, sorry. Neither of your picks are, are valid.
That's an excellent, excellent point.
Yeah, hey, well, let's get off forwards, man. We got a hell of a defenseman on the phone here. So let's ask about Brent Burns.
Too.
He's gone insane this season, and he's carried it over into the playoffs. What have you seen from Brent as far as elevating his game overall this year?
Well, I think defensively he's finally had some things click. And I think any defenseman will tell you in the NHL, when you've made some mistakes, and what happens is when you turn the puck over in the defensive zone, a lot of guys, when you're young, you try to fix your mistake. You try to chase it down. You run out of position, and you compound that mistake by one or two fold, and that mistake ends up in the back of your net. And I think what, you know, Paul Martin has done with Brent Burns this year, playing with him, has quieted his game defensively, knowing that when there's a turnover, if Paul Martin makes it, he doesn't run out of position. Now he lets the game come back to him. He lets his forwards and other teammates support him and allow them to pick up Paul Martin on a tough mistake or a tough turnover. And I think by watching that, Brent Burns has quieted down his defensive style, has allowed the defensive zone not to be a liability, be really a launching pad for his offensive threat. And I think that's been the biggest thing I've seen with Brent Burns this year, and the fact that he's really confident in his defensive zone. He'll make you pay a price because he's a big body, he's physical. And by getting the puck out of the defensive zone efficiently and quickly, that adds right to his asset, which is his shot, his ability to make plays like I haven't seen a lot of guys make as far as defensemen this year. I mean, Carlson from Ottawa, exciting player offensively, and Brent Burns is in that same caliber, really unpredictable in the offensive zone and a threat every time he has that puck on a stick at the blue line when he wrists it to the net, because that's coming with heat. It's accurate, it hits the net, and boy, if you get in front of it, you're going to pay a price.
I'm glad you used the word unpredictable, because whenever I see Brent Burns join the rush and he has the puck, if I'm a defenseman, I'm saying to myself, I have no idea what this guy is going to do. When you played and a defenseman joined the rush and you were defending, what goes through your mind? Because it's not as if you have a book on a defenseman like Brent Burns, or most defensemen joining the rush for that matter. What went through your mind, Brett?
Well, I mean, I think, yeah, I don't know if I've ever really faced a guy like Brent Burns that is so unpredictable coming up the ice, you know, joining the rush. But I think for me, it was all about delay the rush. Pat Quinn, you know, a great coach I had in Vancouver, was, you know, your first, you know, job as a defenseman is delay the rush, is be able to delay the ability to move back and forth, slow those forwards down to help your forwards come back and help out. And I think that'd be the biggest thing that I'd want to focus on as a Brent Burns, is trying to keep him, obviously, to the outside, have him not be able to beat me to the inside, and then close the time and space as you close out the ice coming down attacking the net. I think those are the little things that I try to focus on Brent Burns. But again, he's so unpredictable. He can cut back. He can toe drag it around you. He can play physical in the corners and protect the puck like a forward, like a Jagr type in his prime. I mean, this guy, he has all the tools offensively. And so it'll be fun to watch Nashville Predators and how they can handle his strength and his unpredictability in this series.
Yeah, and let's get to that now. Let's talk matchups. Let's break this thing down. We are, of course, a hardcore hockey podcast with no silliness. What do you think the advantages are for the Sharks in the series? I've been kind of banging the drum that I think even with the acquisition of Ryan Johansson, the Sharks still, I think, have a significant advantage up the middle. But where else do you think that maybe we're going to see some advantages for the Sharks in the series?
Well, I think you're making a great statement as far as up the middle. I think, you know, I look at, you know, Joel Thornton's line and Pavelski and Hurdle as kind of the cherry on top. if you build the foundation of either team, starting with the goaltender and Pekarinen and Jones for the San Jose Sharks, both these guys have the ability to play elite, steal a game, steal a save from an opponent, and I think they both can play at a high level. But then when you go out from there, the six defensemen in front of them, boy, it's arguably these are two of the stronger D, I think, in the playoffs right now. When you look at the top four of Nashville and the top four of the San Jose Sharks, arguably head-to-head, pretty darn close. I mean, you're splitting hairs. And Jackman and Betetto, you know, Pulock and Dillon. I mean, those are good 5-6 guys that are going to make you pay and can move the puck under pressure for the most part, I think. I think there's pretty close when you talk to those six. But if you look at up the front, and the reason why I say Thornton's line kind of a cherry on top is you've got Couture, Marlowe, and Chris Tierney, who's come a long way this season, down the middle for San Jose. They're going to be against guys like Ribeiro, Fisher, Gostad. So you look at that sort of matchup, that's going to be the core and the guts of this series, I believe, is that second, third, fourth line of San Jose versus the second, third, and fourth line of Nashville, Mm-hmm. So I think that's where the matchup is really going to be fun to watch and how these teams line up against each other, the coaching staff, and how they're going to match different lines against different lines, and who's going to come out on that kind of depth scoring or kind of balanced scoring, if you will.
Let's mention the coaches as well. You had Peter Laviolette. I know it's 10 years ago when the Carolina Hurricanes won the Stanley Cup. Again, I know that was 206 and now it's 216, but what should San Jose expect from the head coach of the Nashville Predators, Peter Laviolette?
Well, his experience. I mean, no doubt about it. I mean, finalist Jack Adams, he's been to the finals twice in 06 and 10 as well. I think he's a guy that is a great motivator, and he knows. The year that we won in 06, I thought he did a tremendous job, maybe the best job I've ever seen in the years I played in the NHL, and the fact that he just had his finger on the pulse and knew when to pick us up, when to poke us, when to get our legs moving. I think that's one of the things that coaches make a mistake is that they run practices at 100 feet. They don't run the full 200 feet up and down the ice, and I thought Peter did a really great job of getting us skating at 200 feet. The game's played at 200 feet, not 100. And I think when you can get a coach that gets your legs moving at a high pace and a high rate, you play at that high rate. And I think that's what Peter adds. I know in the playoffs you have to manage your time in between, but truly the work that's been done to get here I think has probably helped Nashville. I think they've played pretty solid in that Anaheim series for the most part. I think they had a couple of hiccups, but, boy, game one and two, I was up close and personal, called those inside the glass for NBC, and I thought Nashville was actually the hitter and not the hit-e. In that series. So they can play physical and a fast pace. So I think that's what Peter adds.
All right. Last one for me, Brett. You're out there. We're back east, and we're frankly sick and tired of having to stay up to watch your damn games. But you what's the vibe out there, man? Like, because, listen, we know the Sharks. We all want to believe in them. We all want to believe in the Blues. We all want to believe in the Capitals. But we also know history. So what's the vibe amongst the fans? Have they made them believers by virtue of beating the Kings in the first round, or are there still some fence sitters?
I think the players included, regardless of what the fans think, I think the fans, they want to see a Stanley Cup run here, and I think that's the minimum. They want to see a team like this get to the Stanley Cup. They want to feel what that feels like to be the last two teams standing. And I think when you look at the locker room and the fans, they know that it's getting to that Western Conference final. It's getting through this series, obviously, getting to the final, and then making it to the Stanley Cup. And having a run at their first Stanley Cup would be what they all are seeking. And so I think they're really pretty level-headed. And I know Pete DeBoer has done a good job this year, and his staff, I think, have done a great job of really setting the expectations early on in training camp and has really been great at holding his players accountable to it. And there has been no deviation with that. So I think, to answer your question, I think it's really just calm. They know it's one series, that's it. And they know that they need to continue to move on to make sure that people are starting to talk about the Sharks instead of the Golden State Warriors.
That's tough, though.
Very tough.
Last one here. I know the Kings were just one hurdle, and it's a pretty sizable one, though. When it was all said and done, and San Jose eliminated Los Angeles, give me one player. Who did you feel best for? Like, who's worn it for so long that you felt, yeah, you know what, good for that guy?
I think Joe Thornton. You know, I think that game six, like I said, I think, again, he didn't have a great night. And I think for them still to win and for him to be the guy that has really had taken the captain patch off his sweater, has handled it with as an absolute pro. I mean, this guy has been, I've been really impressed. And the kind of chemistry between him and Pavelski this season, I was happy for Joe Thornton. I'd like to see him continue to move forward in this playoffs just because of what he's endured through all of the criticism of this player. I'd like to see him play for a Stanley Cup this season. And again, it's just four wins down and you know, 12 more to go. So a long way to go, but Joe Thornton so far has been a guy that I've been really excited to watch and happy for.
All right, Brett, thank you so much for your time, man. Hopefully we talk to you next round. We keep it going with the Sharkies, and we'll see where it goes.
Anytime, guys. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Brett. All the best. Continued success.
Thanks, guys.
Brett Hedekin.
Man, was he a good skater. Holy smokes, could Hedekin fly. God, what a good skater he was.
With all due respect to the Dallas Stars and to the Nashville Predators, who would be fine candidates were they to advance to the Western Conference Final, don't we all want Blues and Sharks? Don't we all want two teams enter, one team must advance between those two teams?
Yeah, but Dallas is just flat out fun. Dallas reminds me of the 80s.
I know.
Dallas is 80s hockey, man. I know what you mean because, geez, both these teams, St. Louis and San Jose. But I don't know. Dallas takes me back to a different time in my life, Greg Wyshynski.
Hello, darkness, Dallas, my old friend.
Oh, it reminds me of the carefree halcyon days of the 80s where no lead was sacred. Yeah, I don't know. I still...
On my official picks, I said Sharks in five. I think they're rolling. I think they're feeling it. I think that they're going to dominate the Predators up the gut. They're not going to do them any favors like the Ducks did. I think the Sharks can win that series pretty quickly.
Ooh, quickly, eh? I don't know about quickly. I've been on point about Nashville for a while. I just love that blue line. And again, last night, that blue line was amazing. The Nashville Predators and Pekka Rinne and, I don't know easily. I think Sano's, no, jeez, this is why I hate making picks. That's why I hate doing picks because I change every single day. And I always have to keep going back to my brackets and say, okay, well, I said that Nashville is going to beat San Jose in the second round. By the way, I did pick San Jose and Nashville and did pick Dallas and St. Louis. More on that.
Yeah, and I ridiculed everybody who did, and I'm not going to apologize. I imagine there was some level of cheating involved in all of this.
Some chicanery. Well, now you sound like Brian Hayward with the John Scott vote, and I was getting gaslighted, juiced by people online. But
there was a computer program, and there was chemtrails. I saw chemtrails.
Oh my god! Okay, I just don't think it'll be easy if San Jose does it. And I did pick Nashville in my bracket, so I got to stay with them. But if San Jose does it, I don't know that it's going to be easy. I don't know that it's going to be, you know, five games like they had against the Los Angeles Kings. This is a tough team to play, man. If they're going to do it, it'll be six or seven.
Okay. I'm picking the Blues in six, and I'll tell you why. You know when you're at the gym? I'm trying to speak Merrick's language, by the way. You know when you're at the gym?
And all the guys from Junior are there working out. And it's strength and cardio day, and they're all sweating like pigs. One guy's barfing like yesterday. Hello, Justice Dundas.
And you hit the weights, and maybe you put on a little bit too much weight on the on the bar. And you're like, whoa, that was rough. That was
spot
tough.
Spot me, bro.
I don't know. I'm gonna take off a couple pounds on this bar. And then I could bench it, and it'll look like I'm Lou Ferrigno. It'll look like I'm 50 times stronger than I actually am because I'm going with the lighter weights.
Yeah,
that's how I feel about the Blues facing Dallas after facing Chicago. It's not to say that Chicago is infinitely better than Dallas. It's to say that Chicago's defense and goaltending is infinitely better than Dallas's. And I feel like if you're the Blues and you've already been through that series with that team – and the way they play, and then you go against that goaltending and Goligoski and Klingberg, who are great except when they put down a welcome mat in their own zone for attacking forwards.
I have a feeling
the Blues are going to feel a little bit of weight taken off them, and it's not going to be easy because I think there's going to be a game where the Blues have it in hand, and all of a sudden Dallas scores three goals in 2 minutes, you know, that kind of thing. But I think they win in six games.
Yes. The undoing for Dallas, I think we all know, will be the goaltending. It's, you know, to the point where I'm sure Jim Nill is already planning the phone call to the Rangers to say, what will it take to get Henrik Lundqvist out of New York? You guys need prospects. We have those. You guys need draft picks. We have those as well. And can we send one of our Finnish netminders to you in exchange for that blue-eyed Swede?
Holy shit. You think they do that, though?
Who, the Rangers?
Yeah. I mean,
dude, Rangers,
if they're smart.
Rangers are at a mess.
If they're
Rangers,
smart,
the Rangers
they would,
may
but
be the
boy,
Rangers may be the biggest mess in the NHL right now. When you look at all the contracts they have and how this team is going nowhere,
but
and
here,
that
but
blue
here's,
line is killing them, and their
I know that. But the problem is that you are looking at it through outsiders' eyes. Trading Lundqvist, if he doesn't ask for it, is like trading Jeter. Like that's the level of celebrity identification. Like he's that in this town. Listen, it makes all the sense in the world. I just couldn't imagine them doing it.
Rangers have problems, bud.
I think it's a better chance they get. I think it's a better chance they pry Fleury out of Pittsburgh than there is anybody else.
There's another one. Okay, that you know what, and that's depending how the Sault Ste. Marie goalie does, Matt Murray. That's a good chance as well. But all I'm saying is, if I'm Jim Nill, right away I'm saying to myself, look, we have the two-goalie system. A lot of it's because of travel. We got frustrated waiting for one goaltender, so we just said, screw it, we're going to sign Antti Niemi, and we're going to do the deal, and it really hasn't worked out.
So Nikushkin, one of the Finns, and then something else.
Well, the Rangers need things. They need young prospects, and they need picks.
And so picks, Nikushkin, and a goalie. Boy, you'd really have to ante up. I don't know. That's a tough call.
I know. Listen, I'm just floating it out there as, you know, we're just goofing around on a podcast.
But I kind of love it. Man. I kind of love the idea.
I know, because you love the blockbuster.
Yeah, well, and also because it ain't like Jimmy Nill hasn't swung for the fences before.
I know. I get that. Yeah. Yep. Totally true. Yeah. Totally true.
All right. Real quick, because I know you have to go. Penguins in 7. I've said this in a couple of places. I'll say it again. Nothing will be more knife twisting and wound opening than when Matt Murray Cam Ward's this thing, and when Ovechkin gets stopped by Murray on a breakaway in a game 7 in Washington, and of course when the Penguins advance in a game in which Justin Williams goes 0 points minus 2.
Oh,
game 7 in Washington.
Oh,
Penguins,
man.
But more tactically, I love the Penguins' offensive depth right now. The Bonino-Kessel line could be a huge difference maker in this series, and I kind of love them on the forecheck too. And you can forecheck the Caps. You can hit that D a little bit back there.
Yeah, and you know I know that a lot of people, specifically Barry Trotz, head coach of the Washington Capitals, thinks it's a disrespect to the other stars in the game to position this exclusively as Crosby versus Alexander Ovechkin. Isn't that what we're all watching here?
That's what I'm watching.
I know they're in different places in their career, and it's not 2009 anymore, and they're not early 20s, they're late 20s. I get all that. But we're watching, you know, the two. Yeah. Hold on, Deke. We're watching.
Yeah,
I'm glad
you specified, because people are going to think that's Sneakers. And Sneakers always gets blamed for any doggy noise on this podcast.
No, that was my guy. That's Deke. Yeah, I know. We're going. Sammy's going to play the music here in a second. We're going to get going. Yeah, that is going to be the sidebar. And every newspaper, I'm sure your blog will do it as well, us at Sportsnet, will have the side-by-side, tail-to-tape, ice time, shots on goal, hits, all of it between Sidney Crosby and Alexander Ovechkin. Just embrace it. Just love it. It's Crosby versus Ovechkin. Don't be embarrassed to say so. Yes, there are other players, great players on both teams, but this is still going to be Sidney Crosby versus Alex Ovechkin.
And finally, like, we could be total dickheads here and adjust our picks based on what happened in last night's game, but I will stick with mine.
I'm still taking Tampa.
Lightning in 6 is what I picked, and I'll stick with it.
I'm still taking Tampa.
All right. Who's your Vezina guys, by the way, real quick?
My Vezina guys.
I'm sorry, your Selke guys. That's what I meant to say.
My Selke guys?
Mm-hmm.
Was it Bergeron, Backstrom? Bergeron, Backstrom.
Is that you saying that Nicky gets in?
Yeah.
I love it. And then real briefly, because this is going to be, this is our last podcast of the week. Friday's the Norris, Carlson, Doughty, and who?
Brent Burns.
Let me see what I picked here. I probably shouldn't have read my Selke choices before, but that's fine. I'm not saying what my top five was. I'm just saying if it was Carlson, Doughty, and Burns, done pretty good. Pretty good.
All right, very good.
Everybody, have a great weekend. Thanks to Sammy for producing. Thanks to Brett Hedekin, CSN Bay Area. Everybody check out his work with the Sharks. Thanks for a great week. Jeffy and I are excited because we have some thing, we have some irons in the fire for this show.
Ooh, yes.
That if they come together are pretty amazing.
Yep.
But thanks again for supporting us. Schedule's been a little funky lately, for various and sundry reasons. And go listen to Jeffy retroactively on Tim and Sid, because that's where he's going now. All right, everybody. Have a great weekend. Enjoy Caps Pens. Bye.
Bye.